You're listening to Face Off, episode 74, recorded June 19th, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. So I'm going to be popping my peas. I broke my pop filter. We made our own, and I broke it.
You pulled your bag out of your trunk or whatever, and then you like slammed it. I'm like, that doesn't sound good. I hope it's not something expensive.
No, that wasn't where I broke it.
Oh, that wasn't
it? No, it was at home when I was tearing down, because we're actually recording at Mark's house in Whitehall, Montana today. I was getting my stuff ready to go to his place, and I was taking my pop filter off of the little stand. See, I'm popping like crazy. I can hear it. It's driving me nuts. I took it off the little stand, and it just kind of vaporized. I don't know how it happened. I think I had like this sort of like these little pinch clip holding it to the thing, and I think that was just so tense that like the slight sort of twist movement made like all the little screws on the little wooden thing that we used just kind of like, and it just popped everywhere, and I was like, no.
For the people that might have forgot or haven't listened to our previous episodes, we actually made these pop filters out of like sewing loops, sewing embroidered loops, and
nylons. Yeah.
So it wasn't like a really sad deal when you broke it, probably.
Well, it was.
Because was it?
We made it, man. I was excited.
We painted them, and it was crafty.
Very DIY. Yeah, I liked it a lot. So
they were great though. Like I can pop, and the peas.
Yes,
don't come
I
out.
Pop too much.
Yeah.
Anyways. But that was sad. Anyways, yeah, here in Whitehall, beautiful day. It's been kind of rainy in Bozeman.
It's been rainy last week, Montana. But it's nice and warm today, and it's supposed to be nice tomorrow.
Exactly.
Maybe some thunderstorms in the afternoon. But
nice sunshiny morning. Good time for some coffee, which brings us to our geek tool this week. Mark and I both bought the OXO Good Grips Pop Container. God, there's peas in everything that we say now. I can hear them all. This container is it's basically just a little plastic container with kind of a airtight seal at the top of the pop button that you can pop to sort of seal and unseal it. And we bought it for coffee because we'd actually found out, we'd heard from some people that what I usually do is I used to put my coffee in the freezer. I'd buy a big bag of beans and I'd put the beans in the freezer. We actually found out that that probably is not the best place to store your coffee.
Yeah, so the freezer, what is it? It holds the moisture in, and then like the freezer smell and all the other things that are in the freezer get soaked into the beans.
Right. So we have a link to this Coffee AM website that has some good text about it. But one thing they mentioned was like, well, you know, one reason people like flavored coffee is because coffee is very porous. It takes flavors and oils very well. It absorbs them quite well. Well, the same goes for your freezer. If it's in your freezer and it's not airtight, totally airtight, then it will absorb the smells of whatever's in your freezer. And as we know, freezers can be kind of stinky. What I do is I put my beans in this OXO container. It's clear, which is not the best. You want it to be dark, but I put it in a dark cabinet. And then it's airtight, dark place. It's cool, dry. You know, you don't want to get too hot. You don't want it to get moisture because it'll get moldy, especially if it's airtight. And so it's up in my cabinet, and then when I need, beans, I pull some out of there, grind them, put them in the coffee maker, and good to go.
Don't have to mess with the freezer.
Don't have to mess with the freezer, it's funny. I've heard from so many people that the best place to keep your coffee is in the freezer. You know, whoa, if you want to keep your coffee fresh, keep it in the freezer. That's absolutely not the case.
One little tip here, don't take your frozen coffee and stick it in one of these and seal it, because you're sealing the moisture in, and it will start, like, molding and things.
Yeah.
It is worth noting that this is the company that we talked about in a Geek Tool previously about the coffee cups.
Yes, our OXO Good Grips Liquid Seal Coffee Cup.
Yeah, and it works the same way. You like press a button down and it seals, and you could literally take your coffee cup and flip it upside down and it doesn't leak.
OXO stuff is really good kitchen stuff in general. I watch a lot of America's Test Kitchen, and they win a lot of like the best stuff. It's really well made. It's well thought out. It's not. When I first sort of moved to Bozeman and would go to Target and see it there, I thought it was kind of a knockoff brand. Uh-huh. It's like, oh, Target has a sort of knockoff kitchen brand, but no, OXO is like really good stuff. So we have the link to our sort of 1.5-quart storage container that Mark and I bought, but there's also like this big 10-piece container set of the OXO pop containers. It's like $90, but like they all stack together, like the lids let you stack them together and stuff. And it's really cool, like for your pasta and stuff, if you really want stuff to be airtight. Pretty cool. Love OXO stuff. Love the pop container.
They're also BPM or
BPA.
BPA free or whatever. So
yeah, you don't have to worry about that stuff.
You're worried about that. Anyways, enough about those.
Well, let's get to our web apps this week. The first one comes to us from our friend Rob Lund. He found this cool little web app called Zwibbler. You can get to it by going to Zwibbler.com. And it's a pure HTML5 JavaScript canvas drawing application.
So is this like a paint or like... Because I noticed when I was drawing, you can actually move things around. So it's a little bit smarter than just like a simple paint. You can actually make objects and drag them around.
Right, you can group them and resize them. So like by default, this is a square object I'm kind of resizing right now. And if you want, being it is vector.
Or you can rotate.
There's ways that you can like, yeah, there's some of them where you can see all the points that made that sort of vector and change them. Like if you make a curvy line.
They have like a sloppiness level. So you can like a draftsman, artist, cartoonist. So an artist would be like really straight lines, and they have one called drunk. It's like all squiggly. A square looks like a circle, kind of.
So like I made a big squiggly line, and I click on it, and it gives you sort of the squares of all like the sort of inflection points that make the curve, and you can like move them around from there and play around with them. Really, really simple, really fun. But I had like fun. I made kind of like this weird little guy with like his arms sticking out and kind of, you know, big eyes and stuff. It's fun little app to play around with. And it's, I think it's just cool because it's totally canvas, you know, no flash.
Yeah. I could see you could do quick little mock-ups with this. Like, here's a navigation bar here.
Yeah, totally.
Here's my logo up here.
Video
you
box.
You could make a little, you could.
Yeah, I mean, you could quickly wireframe or sketch out stuff with this. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And then can you can share the links too, right? Or is it just.
I noticed you can save. I'm not sure if you save.
Let's try saving here. I'll call this. Drawing face off.
I think it saves locally. I don't think it saves publicly.
Okay. So then, open, and then you have your different things. Okay.
Right.
So then you probably couldn't export then, maybe? Well, maybe you probably can once you log in, I'm guessing.
I don't know. Either way, it's just kind of a fun little play toy. You know, these little toy web apps out there that are fun to play around with.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah,
so
check
that's
it out.
Zwibbler, Z-W-I-B-B-L-E-R.
It sounds, yeah, it sounds like you're Zwibbler. Zwibbler. Let's go to Zwibbler. Let's go to our next web app. We've talked about a web app similar to this, but this is called whatfontis.com. I've been thinking a lot about fonts lately since I talked to a couple designers at our Montana programmer meetup about fonts and design. And what this lets you do is it lets you upload an image. You can either upload it or specify a URL with an image. And it extracts all the fonts it can find inside of it and then helps you sort of say, like, which ones you want. You know, it's like, what letter is this to help you try? And then what it does is try and match that font to one in its database.
Yeah. And, you know, I've used the other one we talked about in episode, I think it was 15, was What the Font.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing like a brochure, and it's like if you're not like a really into typography, you have nowhere. I mean, you don't even know where to start. Like, what font is this? I don't want to just like.
Yeah, I mean, I would like close. I would like go to Google, and I mean, I know it's like the basic of like serif and sans serif,
right?
But that's really it. And I'd be like, okay, let me see every sans serif font ever, and I would probably scroll through and try and find it. But this uses like it looks at the font itself and tries to match particular things about it and tries to find, and even if you can't find that exact font, it'll try and find you the closest one so that maybe mm-hmm. if you do want something like it, you can use that.
Yeah, so I was doing a brochure not too long ago, and I just uploaded a little image, and it was like, you know, this is the font right here, and I was like, wow, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is similar, and what I like about this is it's its own website, whatfontis.com. What the Font is like a sub project of myfont.com.
Right.
So I like that this is kind of a dedicated solution.
Well, this one, and here you can see all the fonts if you want, download them. I wonder if they're free. That's interesting. I didn't notice that.
So your alternative fonts, so you kind of display only the ones that you can actually download.
Right, exactly.
If you wanted to get a free one.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's kind of a font database itself. You can see example. It's like, it's pretty cool. So, it just kind of shows you how it picks the font. But anyways, yeah, I mean, there's web apps to do this, but this one looked really a lot cleaner, nicer, and we hadn't talked about a tool that does it in a while, so you can use What the Font or What Font Is. Really cool apps to try and find those fonts in things that you might want to use yourself.
Yeah, so if you're looking at a website and they have a cool font in their logo or wherever else, just take a picture, screenshot, and upload it to this, and you can find out what font they're using.
Yeah, exactly. So listen, if you guys have some news, a follow-up or web application, I need you to let us know. Go to faceoffshow.com/feedback, or you can, you know, email us at studio@faceoffshow.com. I want to hear about it. Our Zwibbler came this week from our friend Rob, who emailed us. So let us know. We want to find the cool stuff that you guys find out there on the internet and talk about it. All right, let's get into our topic this week, which this is kind of a topic that we kind of just had discussed because it's something that was kind of new to both of us. Maybe not so much our other collaborator. I think he's worked in bigger companies where he's had to work together. But working as a team, like programming as a team.
Yeah. So you work with a bunch of people in a kind of an office programming environment. I am like the solo code cowboy kind of thing. But I always try to find the best practices and use the best tools and use an issue tracker and things just for my own personal use. But I'm really seeing the benefit of some of these tools in place. Once we get working into a team, you can really see how they work together.
Right. So we all work for different companies, but then we decided to start a project together. Mm-hmm. And through that, I mean, it's kind of a different situation because Rob Lund, who also we talked about above, recommended Zwibbler. We both live in Bozeman, Montana. You live in Whitehall, which is an hour away. Not too far, but definitely not, you know, a 5-minute drive across town.
Right.
So, I mean, we had to kind of adjust to that as well. So, I mean, it was a unique situation in that. And also, you know, Rob and I, like you said, we had worked in places with other programmers, and you kind of worked by yourself all these years, kind of flying solo. So we had to take that into account as well.
Yeah. So I would say the first thing, so we're going to kind of give some tips that we found just in the last month or so of our working on the project that we're working together with. You know, getting the right tools in place was probably one of the best things we started out with.
So we all don't work in the same office every day. So communication and planning are important anyways, but being that we weren't all right, you know, we couldn't tap each other on the shoulder, it was really important to make sure we had good tools and pick the right ones and had them in place.
It was also important too to have everybody on the same page on the tools. So, you know, for example, if somebody didn't know how to use one of the tools, maybe, you know, that tool wouldn't kind of work out. I mean, we can obviously train them or teach them how to use it, but it makes it a lot easier when everybody kind of knows how to already, you know, to use it already.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You know, you and I, and so I've been using an issue tracker with my own projects, but if I hadn't been, maybe I would have a little bit of confusion on how to like tag certain things as maybe a feature or a bug or
right. It gets hard because and every place has a different workflow. Where I work, we use Redmine, which is what we use for our project, but we use it in a very different way than the way I, you know, where we use it. We use it kind of the way Redmine was designed to be. You know, we do new, and then, you know, if we need feedback from the client, we mark or client with, you know, user, we mark it as feedback, or we, you know, we can resolve it, which is, you know, closed but not verified, and then we can close it, which is like closed and verified fixed.
I guess the bottom line is to get everybody on the same workflow, get them all working,
and looking at the tools and making sure they work with the people you are using, because a lot of people do Basecamp for project management, and the truth is Basecamp isn't a tool that I like using. It doesn't work for what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, it is really important. Like one example is, you know, people that have been using issue trackers probably, this is a simple tip, but like, just assigning it to yourself before you start working on it is really important.
Yeah.
Like I could see somebody that hasn't been used to the tool just going in and start, you know, look at the issue and then go in and start working on it,
right,
and not like assign the name. But the problem with that is another developer, you know, that because you're not working in the same room, could be across town working on the same exact feature because you didn't assign your name. And then you have two code and...
Yeah, when you're not working in the same office and you can't talk all the time, like it's important to rely on that communication to let other people know what you're doing, because, there's some nights where I have to go hang out with my wife and I can't Skype with you and Rob, but if I'm working on a ticket that's open, it's very possible that one of you guys might go and take that ticket and start working on it, and then it's like we have wasted effort because, you know, I spent half a day working on it, and then, you know, one of you guys spent the whole night working on it. You guys got it done. I didn't, but all that time I worked on it was a waste when really I should have just marked it as mine.
Yeah. I remember early on in the project, you know, when we were talking, we were kind of in the planning stage, and I would like kind of, I'm used to like IMing you and things and just chatting with you. And I would say, well, what about this feature? And you kind of mentioned, you know, we should probably put this in the issue track because, you know, Rob and the other people he's the only other one, but are not getting, you know, are not hearing this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you need to be able to have all the information in a spot where everyone can come together and see.
Right. Right. And so, I mean, another tool that we would, that helps with that as well is sort of cheap communication tools such as IM. But again, you do need to make sure that you're careful. Like IM, you're only IMing with one person. So we use like Skype, and we do these sort of three-way audio conferences, which are a great way for us to sort of get together, get on the same page. I mean, we don't have to have very complicated phone systems. It's one of the nice things as technology evolves. We're not using anybody's cell phone minutes or anything, just using Skype over the internet, and we can chat about it. And also sometimes we just do like a three-way phone conversation and work. So it's kind of like we're working in the same office, which is really nice.
Yeah. So when we first started doing that, it seemed as if it was unproductive. Like, because sometimes it is hard, especially if you're working on a hard programming problem, it's hard to concentrate when, you know, somebody else is talking or they're Skyping and you can hear their keyboard or whatever. But
yeah,
at the same, it might seem unproductive, but it's good to do it at least every once in a while, maybe once a week or so. So when you can talk about the features you're doing, you can talk about what you're making and things. So you lose a little bit on the hardcore, like getting stuff done, as far as like the coding part, I think, but you get a lot more done as far as, planning and talking about how the feature should work.
Well, and it depends too. Like we're at my office where I work for, you know, my job is there is a lot of distractions. So for me, when we're doing this sort of, Skype conversation programming, it's like half as many distractions as I get as a normal day at work. In fact, I feel much more productive.
Wow.
Because I get I'm sort of doing some system administration work now. So I mean, people are constantly bugging me. Not bugging, but you know, like, hey, what's good about this? You know, and so like the fact that, you know, we can just kind of sit and crack a joke every like 30 seconds for me is less distracting, but I can see how it could go either way.
Yeah. And you can also get immediate feedback. So you could be like, well, you know, I'm thinking about implementing this feature in this way. And then we can kind of talk about it and be like, well, you know, it might be easier to implement it this way. And you'd be like, oh, okay, that you're right.
Yeah.
And then it's much easier to implement it in that way. And you save a lot more time.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's kind of like pair programming. But you know, e-pair programming, in that like if you have a question or a problem, you ask it and you get everyone else's feedback, and you maybe wouldn't have spent a whole bunch more time spinning your wheels on something when, you know, like Rob who's probably the most the most experienced programmer on our team. You know, he does it, he's a computer scientist by profession.
He went to school for programming.
He's a computer scientist. He has a BS in computer science. You know, we can ask him questions real quick on how he would do it, and it sometimes helps us save a lot of time.
So yeah, I mean, and you know, another thing that I found useful is one time we did this once. Well, we kind of do it when we pair as well, but one time we went through and all we did was just check off and look at every single issue. And I thought that helped us a lot, like just everybody getting on the same page and kind of seeing what issues are still there, what issues we need to add.
What's hanging. Yeah,
so
exactly.
It is good to go to not code, just put that to the side for a little bit and just go through every issue and say, you know, this still needs to be done. This is, you know, this and just go through every issue.
Yeah. And so I guess to kind of like finish up, some of the tools will help you with that. Like we talked about, an issue tracker is really important. You know, we use like a communication medium such as IM, and then also like distributed version control really helps as well, because then all these tools really work together to help you work as a team. They kind of like stitch themselves together in that, like, you know, we have integration for our version control in the issue tracker. So it's really nice, because when you're working as a team, especially in a sort of distributed environment, that's some of the hardest stuff to do is, do I look at every commit that happens in Git? Probably not, because, I mean, you should be doing small commits and then pushing them up, and that would take a lot of time. But since we have integration of our tools, like Rob can put the ticket number that he's working on in his commit message, and it links the two together. So it's really nice. I can like see this issue and go, and like, okay, well, these are the commits that, you know, sort of reference that issue number. Because it's all about really communication, because when you're not working together, you're not in the same office. There's a lot of little things that you take for granted. Mm-hmm. Like just, you know, the fact that you're like, oh, I'll just do this real quick. And there's no one there to hear that, you know?
Right. Yeah. The other thing too is like making small tasks. It's things you can actually do.
Yeah.
You know, instead of saying, I don't know, make email integration into an app or something.
Right.
Make
exactly.
Something like, make sure that you can send emails with, mm-hmm. I don't know, you just chunk it out.
Well, that's kind of a good thing. Let's go into not only the tools are important, but the team. You need to know who you're working with and whether or not you do want to work with them. I've worked with you on a lot of projects. I've been a friend of Rob for a while as well. So I knew that we would all, you know, and I did kind of a, you know, a couple like things like, okay, well, let's all get together and hang out and just talk about, you know, programming in general. And we all seemed to hit it off really well. So I, you know, was like, all right, well, maybe I'll present these guys with an idea that I had and maybe we can, you know, work on it together. And so you need to make sure, you know, that happens. And part of that team is kind of designating roles. So, it kind of just happened because it was an idea that I had. I'm kind of more of a project manager kind of tiebreaker role.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to know that team ahead of time. So you don't want to, I hope I do a good job of, you know, being impartial and saying that, you know, not being like, hey, this is mine, you know,
right.
In that sometimes there will be ties that need to be broken and someone needs to be sort of the tiebreaker. But most of the time, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm the big jerk face that can make every decision either, because it is a project where the three of us are working on it, and that's important to me.
Yeah, it's definitely it's a tough one though. You don't want to be like the monarch dictator, but you want democracy in the group, and you want to talk everything that's important, at least there, that, you know, might be important to one person, to talk it out with everybody. But it's also important to have somebody that's kind of got the veto power, that maybe if somebody's really adamant, you know, if somebody in our group's really adamant about getting some sort of feature in, we'll probably have to talk about it and talk about
totally.
It until you, you know, we can come to a resolution and a compromise or something along that. But if it's something that's like kind of on the edge, you kind of need somebody to say, you know, let's do it this way.
Right. Or sometimes it's not, like, okay. Sometimes you have two perfectly good solutions too, but you just need to say, well, let's quit. We're you know, sort of, what would you say? We're sort of blocked here, just waiting because we have two good solutions and we can't really decide. Someone just say, right. Go for it.
This prevents like arguments before they start. Like, you know, some of the things we did is we're like, you know, we're going to use Rails, or, you know, we're going to use this technology, you know, this, cause this is my, you know, well, you came to us and kind of said, this is an idea that we have to make a project. And, and I was kind of wanting to do this technology, right. and this. And sometimes that it helps. I could just imagine if we were just like, you know, what are we going to use? Rails or this or C#?
Right, exactly.
You could just start getting into some arguments and different things. So,
right.
The other thing is you could have, if you don't have someone where you can kind of go to and say, hey, I'm thinking about implementing this feature. You know, is that a good idea or not? And because if I have this bright idea of adding this massive feature into the app and I don't consult you or the other partners, you could potentially do all this work and then everybody hates it.
Right.
And then that puts you in a bad situation because you're like, well, I worked hard on this and I kind of like, right. I want it in and it's my code. And I don't want to throw it away. And
yeah.
So it's good to communicate. I mean, I think that's kind of the bottom line.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing to think about too is something with that is, code ownership is also kind of a hard subject because you're talking about, you know, like I wrote all this code and I don't want to throw it away. But sometimes it goes both ways too. And you need to think about that. Sometimes code ownership is like you don't want to go through and just rewrite someone else's code all the way without consulting them first because, you know, they may have put a lot of thought into it and decided that that's the best way to go. And you're basically just telling, you know, you're basically kind of saying, well, you're stupid. This is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Which is not good. And then also sometimes just because you think someone owns that code doesn't mean they should own it forever. So
yeah,
talking about this. You worked on a feature on our application and you were like, well, I don't really want to be the, you know, this feature guy forever. You know, yeah. I'd like someone else to be able to work on it too. So,
yeah.
And you know, we may have thought like, you know, well, Mark wrote that, so I don't want to touch it. It's right. His, you know, but really on the inside, you're like, no, I kind of work on something different. Yeah. I don't want to be the guy working on that feature forever.
Yeah. There's two things like you kind of want to be careful going into somebody else's code and start just making a bunch of changes. Cause it could kind of, it's like you said, code ownership. I don't know.
Unless it's like, you know, like, hey, I'm going to do a code review on this, you know, controller.
Maybe there's a bug. If somebody fixes one of my, a bug that's in my thing, it's like, yay.
Yeah. Like, awesome. All right. Yeah, exactly.
But like if somebody starts rewriting it or something, I don't know. I could definitely see that.
And knowing your team, again, it comes down to knowing your team as well too. Like I know that if I write something, it, you know, there's a possibility I didn't make it the most efficient way possible, or there may be a bug. So if you or Rob went in and rewrote my code, I mean, these are the people I like to work with. I like to work with people that aren't, you know, big, you know, rah, rah, that's my code. And, but maybe you might have a team where that's okay, where you want someone that is just so dead set that their code is perfect that that's, you know, it's never going to need review. And that might be the type of team you want. But you need to think about things like that when you, you know, work for someone. It's really easy sometimes to find people that want to work on projects with you, but it doesn't mean that they're always the best people to work on a project with you, you know, because it could cause a lot of problems in the future.
A lot of these problems, too, kind of go away when you start pair programming because you're all kind of putting into the feature instead of just one person going off and doing it.
Right.
So, I mean, some of that's mitigated. And yeah, you just, you don't want, well, I'm the only guy that can work on that feature.
Yeah.
That's...
Well, there's like, it's weird. There's two schools of thought too. I've heard a lot of people say that the age of the in-person office is dead. I feel like we have tools that make it easier for distributed teams to work, but I still think the best work comes from teams that work together in person. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I like when every once in a while you come to Bozeman, we all, you know, pack up, go to Rob's house, you know, and work on it separately. It's not like we're not even like really pair programming, but we're just in the same room for a couple hours working on it. You know, that's a really good vibe that you just sometimes you don't get. And I like that. So I don't know which direction it's moving in. I think it's a personality choice and you need to, you know, again, look at your team like that. Like you and I have done face off stuff and we kind of knew that we work well from a distance, you know, but we still like to see each other in person and you're okay with coming to Bozeman a lot. So that worked out.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if we were people that didn't work well from a distance, you know, like that's maybe a programming relationship that, you know, you shouldn't engage in the first place because it'll just be problems.
Yeah. It's all about balance, you know, do a little bit of remote, do a little bit of Skype, do a little bit of in-person if you can. You know, just keep it all balanced.
Yeah, exactly. And it's good to get in sync. Like we took we went camping, what was it, last weekend or 2 weekends ago? And it was, you know, no computers, just camping, but it was like a good way for us to just kind of sync back together and hang out and talk with each other. And you need stuff like that too, just because you're remote doesn't mean that you should never see, you know, I think it's important once in a while to get together and maybe, you know, build a team.
Yeah. That was probably one of the best discussions we ever had because we had nothing else to do. There's
no computers to bug us or anything like that. So
no phones bleeping and blooping.
So some of the things that we kind of hit on some of these, but some of the things that we know don't work, you know, one is just kind of you need to be careful how you talk. If you're working by yourself, someone submits a bug, usually you feel okay. But when another programmer says it, sometimes it's easy to get kind of defensive.
Yeah. You don't. So one of the times a code was committed and it was like, I didn't even look at the issue tracker because we were pairing on Skype and I was like, oh, well, it's still broke, you know, and it is, it's easy to get defensive and say, what are you talking about? If you would have read the issue tracker, you would have known that I'm still working on that feature or whatever. And so, yeah, you just got to be careful and read that.
Or kind of what we talked about with code review, you need to be careful about just going and rewriting someone's stuff because, you know, they may have put good thought into that. They may have thought of something you might not have. And so sometimes it's so easy to get stuck on this is the way it needs to be done, where that person may have thought about it and they thought, you know, well, maybe, okay, with the future implementation, this will be, you know, code that we can reuse or something. You know, it's important to think about those things as well. Don't just go and start plowing through stuff because you got to remember you are a team now. It's not just you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the key here is just be as communicative as possible and just let everybody know what's going on. Like, I remember when we did part of the project required that you had to run a command before stuff would work.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to make sure that everybody sees that command. Otherwise they're going to pull the code down and everything's going to be broken. And they're going to be like, why is everything broken? Somebody broke
you committed
stuff.
Broken code.
And then, you know, I could start getting defensive and say, well, it's not broke. You didn't read the notes I put in, but it
could snowball.
Yeah. But I made sure to, I think I even emailed you guys or told you on Skype or whatever, hey, make sure you guys run this little thing. Otherwise everything's going to look like it's broke.
Right.
Just be really, just communicate as much as possible.
Exactly. So, I guess some of the tools that we use specifically, we use, Redmine is an issue tracker. I like Redmine, but there's lots out there, all kinds of them out there actually. Lighthouse, Basecamp, Track, tons and tons. We use version control. We prefer distributed version control using like Git and Mercurial, but you could also use Subversion, CVS, or Bazaar, any of those out there. Cheap and easy communication. This is like, you know, Google Chat in Gmail with, you know, Google Video, or we prefer Skype. I like Skype a lot.
We use FriendPaste, which we talked about in one of our episodes. They're like copy and paste code back and forth and work on it. You can like fork it and do some of that. It's all private.
We use GitHub to host our repository, which also is nice. It has some other features too. You can make comments on people's commits online and stuff. And then, you know, any instant messenger is really nice. Another tool we use, which is Google Docs, really handy for stuff like that. We haven't used it much in Agile or in our project yet, but...
we also use a wiki. It's built into Redmine. We kind of use a wiki to, like, plan things
collaborate
out
on stuff, yeah.
And talk about, like, future, you know, roadmap stuff. Like, we're not going to work on this feature yet, but we plan on having it in there.
Totally.
Stuff like that.
And the best tools you can have are good friends to work with, because that makes it so much easier if you are working with people that you enjoy and have fun with. So, and it works out for us.
Yeah, but we would love to hear any tips you guys have for working with.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, this was sort of our use case, and I'm sure there's tons else out there. So I want you guys to tell us about it and tell us what you think, because I am really curious. I mean, this is we're definitely kind of feeling this out as we go. This is not something that we know how to do inherently, and so we want to kind of figure it out and hear what you guys have to say. So go to faceoffshow.com/feedback to let us know. If you haven't subscribed to the show, go to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can subscribe there all kinds of different ways too. And please go let us know how you guys are working together as a team and what works for you. And we will see you guys next week.